Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends with the OSR. I am your host, Jason Hobbs. And as always, I have a guest with me. Sometimes they're famous people. Sometimes they're not so famous people, but they're always interesting and awesome. So today it is Alex Kammer. Hey, Alex, how's it going?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You have, as always, it seems on this show, been very patient with me and didn't get too angry with me for all the times I switched us up on when we were going to meet up. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, of course. We all have busy, complicated lives. And at the end of the day, doing the things we love, like gaming, sadly has to get pushed aside occasionally for real life. So believe me, I get that.
I totally agree. And like I said, I'll say it again. I appreciate it. So sometimes in my introduction, I kind of say something about the guy and then surprise everyone with who it is, but I changed that for you. So if people did know who you were, I would say you have one of the top five TSR collections or something. Do you want to talk about that briefly?
Yeah, sure. Okay. That's right. I'm known for a collection, my gaming collection. I have a extensive collection, which I've been working on for years, which is housed in my gaming room called the Game Hole. And it has been thus interred for many years. I have been working on it for a long time. And I've actually kind of slowed down of late because I pretty much have everything I want. I'm looking for a couple things here and there, maybe some better copies. But my claim to fame, if I'm going to have one, and small F fame on this for sure, is that I have a complete set of TSR materials in original shrink wrap. I think lots of people have all the stuff. But I have one, so I have all the modules from, the first module to, I haven't really looked at that complete, probably to the early 90s somewhere. I don't know the exact date because I have some that, of course, go beyond that, but for being complete. So, all the first edition D&D and a lot of second edition D&D modules and supplements, basically everything that was released in shrink wrap. The why is a better question, but I do have all that stuff. And I also have among the better set of rares in the world. Brown boxes, Artists of TSR, Orange B3s, Daystar West modules, the Palace of the Vampire Queen, all the really old stuff that got our hobby started in the mid-70s. I don't go before that, so I have some. I have a first print chainmail, for example, but there are some folks who are big collectors of the stuff from TSR and other founders of the hobby that are not D&D. I'm a D&D guy, so my collection's all about D&D. So even TSR things that aren't D&D, board games and so on, other role-playing systems, I don't collect. because, also it's space. It's just a lot of stuff, and I had to draw lines in the sand.
Yeah,
for example, I don't collect foreign printings. That's another one. It's just too much. So there you go.
That's interesting that your collection is such that you have to come up with these limits on why you're going to limit and what you're not going to do. And I'm sure that was a lot more energy spent on those decisions than I spend on a lot of things.
Well, it's just because you'll find yourself all of a sudden just buried in stuff. And, I wanted to be able to have it reasonably well contained. And this is a massive collection, even with the parameters that I've outlined, in terms of the physical space required. If you ever come to the Game Hole, you'll see, it's shelves and shelves and shelves of stuff. That's also accessible and on display, more or less. That's also part of it. I didn't want to get to the point where I have stuff in boxes and storage, and that really defeats the purpose, in my opinion, for me anyway. And there are people who do that, and that's great, and I'm good for them. But that's why. And so now, when I get new stuff now, I have to make decisions. Do I really need all the copies of, some of the Castles and Crusades stuff I have, for example? And I just donated some of that because I had extra copies of things. So, you know, I'm trying not to be a hoarder, Jason, is what my point is.
Well, good luck on that. I think most of us that are my age anyway, I'm not going to say your age, Alex, but we have too many things and we should probably get rid of some of them anyway. So I can understand that. All right. So You're also doing some writing now. This is primarily for 5e and it's, what is it, like con-created content or something?
Yeah, lots of stuff. I'm actually, just this morning, I've been working on a module. In addition to GameholeCon, which I'm the owner and director of, there's a side part of it called Gamehole Publishing. And it's a small imprint, and we produce our own materials, gaming materials, and those are, we're developing our own setting. And it is using 5th edition rules, but those, it could be 1st edition rules. This is setting material. And modules, adventures. I'm not a big, I'm certainly not an edition war guy, and certainly not, going to fall on my sword over any specific edition of D&D rules, because they're really, we're talking about degrees of separation. You know, people really get I think caught up on these very discrete differences. But I write 5th edition OGL modules, and so do a couple of the other guys. Ed Greenwood has published a series of modules under our flag, developing our setting. So that's one set. The other, which you referenced, are con-created content for D&D Adventures League, and that's a separate matter. That's something that the folks at Wizards, who are great allies, friends of me and my show, have granted us the honor of being able to develop a portion of the Forgotten Realms in which we can create storylines and write adventures and world build without anyone else being able to do it in this area. And we selected, Ed Greenwood and I selected the Border Kingdoms as our place to do this. So we will have at GameholeCon this year, you can come and play, I think, 11 different Border Kingdoms Adventure League adventures. You know, for those that are inclined to play organized play, modern organized play. So these are, 2, 4, or 6 hour adventures. And you sit and play in the Adventures League Hall. And if anyone's been to a gaming convention anytime in the last 3 or 4 years, you'll have seen that extravaganza. So yeah, two separate things, writing for organized play and also for our own imprint.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So The elephant in the room, I think, really is talking about the GameholeCon convention. And that kind of moves into the next thing I usually talk about during the introduction is how we know each other. And I actually met you at my first GameholeCon. I'm not sure if you remember, but Brett has tried to introduce me to you like 3 or 4 times, I think.
I certainly do remember, Jason. Sure, of course.
Well, I wasn't famous then, you know, so.
Well, I don't think either of us are now.
I don't either. And that's why I was laughing.
Yeah.
So I guess I wanted to talk to you a lot about GameholeCon. You've mentioned some of the stuff like your the DDAL stuff that you got to write and the con Adventurers League stuff that you're allowed by Wizards to put on. So is there something else, I guess, like, do you want to talk about? Well, maybe we should mention Gaming and BS and the idea that you have done the Podcaster's Row first, because that's the thing I'm probably most excited about.
Sure. So I think I can talk about that in context a little bit. And that is GameholeCon. So it is, by the name alone, you should immediately get the impression that this cannot be a serious commercial enterprise. If you were going to set off to build a big fancy successful business, you'd probably pick a less, caustic name, one that you know, like, something like Barbarian Con or something like that, something that sounds cooler. The reason that GameholeCon has its name is because the guys that run the show are all members of the Gamehole, which is my game room, and we've been playing together for almost 20 years, playing D&D. First edition forever, second edition for a long time, a little bit of 3.5, and now more recently we've been ported into 5th edition. But we've been playing together forever, and so if we were going to put on a convention, it had to be GameholeCon, because that's who we are, and if it's not going to be named that, then we're not running it, and that's the way it came to be when we decided that we were going to put on a show. So because it's, and the type of show we wanted to run was one that's obviously fun, high energy, and promotes gaming, tabletop gaming. Ours is not a fantasy fan con. Mm-hmm. You know, there are no cosplay contests or, you know, anime rooms or lawn rooms or anything like that. It's all tabletop gaming. So RPGs, miniatures, and board games. And really, that's it. So we wanted to promote, first of all, local gaming, because I sit here in Madison, Wisconsin, very close to the birthplace of D&D. We take our geography seriously in terms of Gen Con started here, D&D started here. Most of the major designers in at least RPGs and a lot of board games have some sort of ties to Wisconsin. So we wanted to promote also local gaming. So that is local designers, local media folks, and so on. And so podcasters, I think, play a very important role in the expansion of the hobby, because lots of people, and this is what has really been revealing to me as we're in year six of GameholeCon, I've met thousands of gamers, literally thousands of them. And I am impressed by how many gamers out there don't have a regular game. It was just stunning. It's stunning to me, because I'm so used mm-hmm. to having a regular game. And so then if you don't have a regular gaming group, because of whatever reason, you're too busy, you live in a region that you just don't know anyone. So what do you do? Well, you can stop in and play games at stores, which is great. But then you can also interact with the hobby through things like podcasts, mm-hmm. podcast interviews, podcast discussions. So it's a great way to, I just think if the podcasts are an important part of the hobby, because it just, again, brings people into the hobby, and it also keeps people in the hobby because it keeps them engaged. So that's a long way of saying that we're really happy to promote podcasters like yourself by giving you free space at the show and, you know, giving you access to our guests if you want to interview them. I mean, we always get tremendous guests every year because it's, you know, you guys are important. It's just, that's simply that.
I've always promoted you and the GameholeCon. I mean, not only just because, you know, you gave us podcast space, but I was very excited about the con the first time I went, when Only Gaming BS was the only booth there really in the podcasters area, you know? So that is really awesome. And I think in some ways you're right. I didn't realize how many people would ever listen to this show. So having anybody, and then they always seem to enjoy when I talk about cons, and I'm pretty much usually just talking about what I do. So I go to cons, and that's another place, if you don't have a very good gaming group, that you can go and get into a lot of cool games. So that's pretty exciting. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
all right. Exactly. So you've given me more love than I'm comfortable with talking about podcasts. So,
<That's
funny. laughs> so if we when we talk about GameholeCon, you've mentioned a couple cool things. What are some more draws? Like if someone was just to say, why should I go to game? I've actually seen this a couple times on G+ and Twitter recently. And people say, hey, why do you go to GameholeCon? What's the biggest draws? What do you think it would be?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. All I can say is that we have draws because just the explosive growth that we continue to experience is insane. And I think the reason is we set out to run a convention, even though it has a silly name, and even though it's about, joy and celebration of the hobby, it's very professionally and seriously run. We take the organization side of it very seriously, which is really, if you're a frequent convention goer, that is something that's lacking mm-hmm. often. And myself and the guys have been going to conventions for years, and it just makes us crazy when there's screw-ups with registration, when the site fails with registration, and or misplaced badges, or games that don't start on time, or just screw-ups at the convention. So we take the preparation of the show very seriously, because we've set up GameholeCon to be the kind of convention that we want to go to. That means a great selection of games, a tremendous list of guests touching all areas of the hobby, old school design personalities, newer designers in role-playing games, board games, and miniature games, have a tremendous menu of games, so array of things, so something for everyone kind of thing. Good value, so this is not, you know, let's squeeze every dime out of everyone. That means, you know, selling our t-shirts for just a little over cost, selling our badges for much less than just about any convention, because we want it to be accessible, and then execute it. So when you show up at our will call and you say, here to pick up my badge, my name is blank, you will get a packet. In that packet will have an envelope with your name on it. In that envelope will have your badge, a lanyard, a schedule. Your schedules are now virtual, and game tickets, if you chose to have them printed, we also have virtual tickets now. And we have scrolling monitors of ongoing games. We have the space laid out, I think, very well in terms of, you know, knowing where you're going, and have maps that are accessible and signage that tells everyone where to go to try to find stuff. We've tried very hard to think through the attendee experience, and at any point where, hey, this is something that usually pisses us off, let's fix that, and think prophylactically instead of being reactive with problems. And that's what most shows do. They say, oh shit, we need a sign here that says you should go here. Well, just, you know, think that through in the front end and be ready to roll, so when your people show up, they can have a great time and they don't need to screw around by, you know, having something unwound at the registration desk. So even if you do put the maximum effort and do the best you can, there's still going to be some glitches here and there. But our goal is to get as close to perfect as possible. And I think the proof is in, you know, the pudding, as they say. People that come to our show come back.
Yeah.
You know, they're excited to come back, and they tell their friends about it. It's not like we're doing any big advertising or something like that. I mean, it's not that way, but we're still growing. I mean, this year we're 50% up than last year. That's crazy.
That's a lot.
It's nuts, man. We've been consistently in that 35 to 40% growth each year, which is, again, crazy, way more than I would ever have thought. But this year, the growth is even steeper. So I don't know. I guess you're in as good a position to answer that question as I am, because you're looking at it from the other end. You know what's cool about it? And so it's just a really awesome time.
Yeah, you should be very proud of it, honestly, because I agree. It's definitely ran. If I was just going to have to say what is the best ran con, I would immediately say Game Hole, because you don't have any of the problems that you see in a lot of the other cons, which I mostly go to Gary Con, Game Hole Con, and North Texas. And of those, your registration is way better than any of those. If you've ever watched any of the registration fiascos on the forums of those other cons. And then even when stuff happens, you do a good job of preparing ahead of time. But even when stuff happens, you do a good job of making sure it's fixed. Like, I was sitting in the booth last year with Edwin, and Brett was next to me, and Josh comes up to tell Brett, hey, you know, your GM didn't show up. And he was talking about Chris Sneezak, actually, who we knew didn't show up. And we thought that he had said that he wasn't going to be there so you guys could let the players know. But he says, yeah, there's a player sitting around a table waiting for someone. And Brett felt responsible because it was under the Gaming and BS Presents flag, you know, that he puts on. And so we were like, oh, okay. And I was like, hey, Edwin, why don't you go run something? And so Edwin just did. And it was really cool. But I mean, Josh made it, came to us to ask us about it and didn't say anything bad about us, but it all, and I don't know how those guys did or anything, but it was just cool that, you know, you do it, you take care of the stuff. So.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, we try to, and the you know, I love Gary Con in North Texas. Those are some very good friends of mine that I run. I've helped with, you know, quite frankly, I've helped try to with some of the problems with, you know, challenges, I guess, that North Texas has had, Doug and Mike, and of course, Luke. I was on staff for 1 year as we're making the transition from their previously disastrous registration system to tabletop events, which has been a wonderful change. So now they have something that is reliable, and they're growing as a result. I mean, you look at a show like Origins, which is really a good convention, but they have the same fail every year, and it pisses people off, and people don't come back. I mean, they could really compete with Gen Con in terms of size if they wanted to, but they just have to fix some basic problems, and it's frustrating that they don't. But whatever, I mean, that's their decision. I just didn't want that ever to happen to us. Even the little tiny glitches we've had, I've been so embarrassed by. Same with the guys. I mean, we really try for perfection, because that's what you should do. I mean, I approach it like a business as far as the way it operates, not as a hobby. I approach everything else like a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, the games I run, that I write, everything else, that's hobby, fun, joy. But when it comes to the mechanics of the convention, it has to be run like a business, or it just won't work. So Yeah, that's pretty.
It's awesome stuff. And I don't know if you've seen my my buddies Sean and Brett. They always say, "Get your ass to Game Hole Con." I've added the "Get your friends' ass to Game Hole Con" just because I think it's funny. And hey, we're bringing another person, right? And I mean, I love Game Hole, so it's awesome.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of it is that, you know, we are not. I know this is an OSR podcast. I consider myself an OSR guy, having, you know, bought my first player's handbook in 1982, which was a sixth printing player's handbook, and been a D&D, you know, devotee ever since. But we have a whole array of games that hopefully appeal to just about everyone. And I think that's because we can talk about that. It's an interesting subject. I'm just not real big on the artificial distinction. I believe I shouldn't even say that. I believe these are artificial distinctions between OSR game and a modern game. And it's a fun thing to talk about. But attendees can come and play first edition D&D. They can play fifth edition D&D. They can play first edition Shadowrun or fourth edition Shadowrun and Call of Cthulhu all the way through eighth edition, and you know, so on. And same with board games, old board games, new board games. We have a huge games library. The Milwaukee Company Gamers comes and they have thousands of games that they in their library, and that's free. We have a very big open play space. That's another thing that pisses me off about going to conventions, is that you can't find a place to sit down and play. I mean, that's nonsense. So we have, and we keep expanding our open gaming area, and we have a new really cool area this year that's going to go upstairs, that's going to expand our existing open play area. Free miniature paint and takes, you know, stuff like that. So you can come and enjoy a big, robust dealer hall, for example, check out a game from the games library, you know, have fun without, you don't necessarily have to be in ticketed games. Although the vast majority of our attendees do play ticketed games. You certainly don't have to. So I don't know. We're trying to be, you know, something for every tabletop gamer. If you're a non-electronic tabletop gamer, that's who we're trying to
Yeah, and you actually even have that kids track, what I don't think you mentioned here, but I mentioned it previously on this podcast, but if you want to talk about that, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I'm tremendously proud of. I have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old. I'm kind of an older guy with young kids, but a lot of the guys in the game hole also have kids in that age range. And so gaming for us and our kids is a very important thing and something we care about. It's a hobby we want to pass on, just like, you know, if you have a love of a certain sport or whatever, that's something that we do, and we want our kids to have a fun place to play. So we created a dedicated kids track where DMGMs apply. First of all, you get vetted to see if you're an appropriate candidate to run games on our kids track. It's in a specific area. It's not daycare. You can't drop your kids off and walk away. But we do have a volunteer there in addition to the DMs and GMs to run the games to sort of just make sure everything's okay. And it's designed for kids ages 6 to 12. And we have – that's been a very high growth area as, you know, all of us have kids now. And we want our kids to play D&D and all kinds of other games. My daughter's going, my 10-year-old's going to run a game of Dungeon, the original Dungeon game, board game, the Dave McGarry designed Dungeon game. And she was thrilled that yesterday all her tickets sold out. So she was tickled pink about that. So, it's just one of those, you know, I took the Wizards guys when, you know, the couple of Merles and Chris Lindsay were walking around, said, "Hey, man, come check this out," and showed them the kids track. And they're like, "Wow, check that out." Like, this tables of nothing but kids playing role-playing games. So there you go. And they're big fans of that too, of course. And the kids get tremendous swag. I mean, who doesn't want to promote kids and gaming? So every kid who registers for Kids Track game gets this unbelievable bag of stuff. I mean, last year it was a D&D starter set and a plushie, and I mean, just like hundreds of dollars worth of stuff.
Oh, that's
just
awesome.
Given to the kids because, well, yeah, it's really sweet. And I got this huge box of Pokemon cards, for example, in my office right now. You know, that's going to be fodder for the kids' track bags. I mean, we keep getting all this great stuff, great swag for the kids. I'm delighted by it because, again, it's promoting and introducing convention gaming to the next generation. Which, I think about the first time that you gamed at a convention. It was I was a young adult before I, you know, kind of worked up the courage to go play in a game at a convention. And now these kids are going to be like, hey man, that's just what you do.
That's very savvy. All right. Awesome, man. So we talked about Game Hole kind of a lot, which is great. That's most of the reason I had you on. But usually when I have a guest on, we talk about what we played recently in games. So I'll start and then you can think about what you're going to say while I talk about mine. So I ran my Kalmata game a couple times and this is, I don't know, we're in the 30 or 40th session, probably maybe 50. I don't even know. I don't keep track. And a lot of plot points are actually starting to come out and I'm mostly running this on my live stream on Tuesdays. So if you're bored, you can check that out. And then this morning I got my second section of Freebooters on the Frontier with which is a dungeon world hack. Which I play through kind of the Gauntlet gaming online community. And there are people from all over the world that play that game. I don't know where they're all from. All I know is that I have a heck of a time pronouncing their actual names, let alone their character names, which is not a dig on them in any way. In fact, it's pretty awesome just to see the cultural, you know, spread of gaming and just a different way of doing things. And they're all really great guys to play with. So what about you?
Well, let's see, recently, of course, Gen Con was recent. True. So that's sort of still on my consciousness. I'm currently running D&D for the guys where I'm taking them through the Tomb of Annihilation, the current fifth edition sort of mega plot hardbound adventure. So we've been playing that. And it's been great. It's a really fun dungeon delve with a lot of zany, crazy stuff, just devious traps. It's a kind of a mashup of the Tomb of Horrors with a lot of wrinkles and a lot of fun in it. So we've been having a great time with that. But one of the traditions that we have when we go to Gen Con is that Saturday night we sit down and we play board games that we bought at the show. And so we sat and played a series of different board games, trying them out. And that's always fun to try to play ones that are mm-hmm. pretty quick play, you know, and quick to learn. And it's also just so we can have stuff to take home to our families and play with our kids. So we had our board game Saturday night at Gen Con and our ongoing campaign of Tomb of Annihilation. And the guys are now down at the fifth level, getting really deep in a section called the Gears of Hate, as they're getting closer and closer to the source of the evil and the soulmonger itself. And we've had some
deaths. Good. And, glad to hear it. More. No.
So, yeah.
I think Gen Con was the only convention that I haven't seen you at this year that we were both at.
Oh, well, Gen Con's madness. Gen Con is, you know, I love Gen Con. I think it's mostly, I think there's a lot of nostalgia and sentiment that sort of overlays the way I feel about Gen Con. Because if I were to evaluate it as a first-time attendee, I think I'd have a very different view of it, given... I'm not going to cast aspersions, but the quality of gaming that's offered and the quality of experience that's offered. But you know, we have our own fun there, and we rented a suite and had a day where we played. Actually, this was awesome. I should have mentioned this. We played four different two-hour one-shots. So I ran a small D&D thing. One guy ran a RuneQuest game that was super fun. You don't get enough chance to play RuneQuest. We played a 2 hours of Savage Worlds. It was actually a Weird War II. And then we played, I'm pulling a blank on the system. It's the new game, that takes
kind of a
Stranger Things. Oh, pulling a blank. Exactly.
Tales from the Loop. Tales from the Loop then.
But yes, it's that game. Tales from the Loop. Thank you. We played Tales from the Loop and that was fun. So anyway, we played four games, four 2 hour one shots over a 9 hour stretch. And so that was. That's why you didn't see me. I was cloistered in a place, you know, really gaming hard the whole weekend.
All right. Awesome. So let's finish up this introduction section. And the last thing is everything about you. You know, have you ever heard Ugly Kid Joe?
No, sure.
Okay. So this basically is based off of that. So usually it's just something that the listeners may not know about you. I've done a lot of them, obviously. But most people probably know this, but they haven't figured out. I was at Gen Con. I was nominated for an Annie and I didn't win. So it's all right. Yeah. It's all right. Yeah. Like I've said, being nominated for an Annie, huge, huge, feel very good about that. You know, it's just a great thing to happen. And losing is even better in some ways because you have some character building aspects to go through when that happens. It was cool to go to, and I'm very glad I experienced it. So the listeners and the guests are really what make that happen. So I appreciate everybody. So what about you, Alex?
Well, first of all, good on you. That's the right attitude. I mean, it's the experience and the honor of being nominated for something like that. That's, of course, I know it sounds kind of trite to say that. And it's also, you know, can be like, not crocodile tears, but trying to put a brave face on something that's disappointing. But that's really the reality. I mean, that's true. And I think your attitude's great about it.
Well, thanks.
About me, let's see. I'm known, of course, for GameMoCon to some extent for my collection and to some extent for the writing I do for, you know, Goodman Games and Frog God Games and Wizards and so on, and my own title. But I am actually an attorney by day. That's what I do for a living. That's how I feed the cat, as they say. I own a couple of pubs. In fact, the game hole is located above one of my pubs here in Madison. And I think finally something that is kind of not commonly known about me is that I was a avid amateur trending to professional photographer as my hobby for quite a while until I had kids. You know, I was going to art shows displaying landscape photography that I did. You know, I'm sitting actually in my attic, which is a photo studio too. It's, I have a big printer here and
awesome.
A framing studio, so I build my own frames and all that kind of stuff. That's all that stuff is kind of on hold with all the other stuff I'm doing.
But, I bet.
That's a thing that I enjoy, and someday I'll get back to it.
Awesome. All right. Very good. Well done. So you mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were reading ahead, you cheater, but but I was curious. So I know that you are, you know, came from early first edition gaming and you've heard of the OSR, and I was curious. Yeah. I've been kind of talking to a couple people about this recently, and I was wondering what you thought. Do you think that is part of the OSR, or is that just playing old school games, or are they the same thing, or are they different?
God, you know, that's really hard for me to say, because as you pointed out, I'm as old school as it gets, really, when it comes to gaming. I've been playing for so long. I played thousands of first edition games. I mean, I remember when Gen Con moved to Indianapolis, and 3.5 had just been released, and I'm sitting with my group with the first edition D&D screen, and people were walking by looking at us like, what the hell's wrong with those guys? You know, so I mean, we played first edition, first, second edition for a long time, deep, basically into the Pathfinder era, until we started playing something, you know, trying different systems. So I've played a lot of first edition D&D, so it seems, and now that I'm into fifth edition, I don't see that I'm playing fifth edition, I don't feel any different. You know, I'm like, what, am I a new school gamer now all of a sudden? I don't, you know, I know when people read my modules that are written for fifth edition rules, they say they have a very old school feel. Well, I don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. I just write what comes naturally to me and the style that comes naturally to me. But that's so, you know, so I guess there, you know, people have different opinions on that about what makes a game old school or not. And, you know, I think a rule set can be run in any number of ways. I don't think it should in any way inform a style. So my fifth edition games, you'll find to be quite deadly. There's a criticism that, oh, you can't die in fifth edition D&D. Well, that's demonstrably false. And, you know, you can come and play my game if you have any real, if you have some ambiguity on that point. And you can, you know, ask folks who played with me in North Texas when we did the Queen of the Deem Web Pits converted to fifth edition, how that worked out for them. I think that old school games are definitely a thing. I mean, those are defined by an era, for sure. But old school gaming is a little harder for me to get my head around because I'm not really exactly sure what it means, because I think it means different things to different people.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you did a lawyer's job of avoiding that question. Good work. No.
Thank you.
All right. Since you are involved in 5e, and I mean, you know, a lot of the famous people, because streamers and Twitchers and that sort of thing are as important as podcasting in the explosion of gamers today. So do you think any of those people would be interested in shifting over or bridging over into old school or the OSR?
Well, I think so, but Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that, let's back up. So you're absolutely right about the proliferation of streaming and what it's done for our hobby. And some, and especially in the OSR community, will say what it's done to our mm-hmm. hobby, not for, that it's not a positive thing. But I was actually, pardon my name drop, but Chris Perkins and I were talking recently about streaming, and Wizards, they have data that shows that in the last couple of years, we've hit a point where more people are entering the hobby because of things, of games they see on YouTube and Twitch than the traditional way, which is the way we got into the game. We had a friend who played, mm-hmm. and hey, you got to play, you should play D&D, you should play Shadowrun, you should play Call of Cthulhu. Far more people are entering the hobby through watching it on a computer, and which is amazing. You know, again, for an old dog like me, that's just far out. It's just, I'm still, you know, Chris and I are talking about this. We both are, and he's a little more used to it, obviously, right. than I am. But the concept that people want to watch other people play D&D is still amazing to me, that it's a real spectator port. You know, I'm not dissing it on at all. It's just this. You would have, if you suggested that to me 10 years ago, I would have said, you're nuts, man. I just don't see
it. Why would anyone want to do that? I have my own stream. I just talked about it and I don't watch it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it can be, you know, you talk about, you know, shows like Critical Role or Saving Throw. They're very talented actors, often voice actors, have great improvisational mm-hmm. skills. And I think the one thing that I found that is that I think people have to guard against is that just because those folks on Critical Role play like that doesn't mean that you have to have crazy voices and, you know, be extremely theatrical to have a good D&D game. I mean, a good D&D game is whatever you guys have the table and the DM and the players have fun with. And so that's something that I think is interesting, the expectation that of new players who come into the hobby having seen Matt Mercer run a game and thinking that's what D&D looks like. It sure can mm-hmm. look like that, but not far from norm.
That's not what my game looks like. Some of my buddies say that. That's not my D&D, but it's still D&D, and no one's, you know, denying that fact. Yeah. It's just, it's always been something that could be different for different people. So, but
let me answer the question though, which is will newer players want to, you know, get into old school games? I think the answer is if we let them, you know, if there is a section of the community that tends to have more gatekeeping than any other, and I'm not casting aspersions, it is the old school community and I understand that too. This feels really important to me. The fanatical way that I mine my collection and keep that stuff that means so much to me as a kid, you know, that's why I have an original shrink wrap set, because I can fantasize about someday I can sit down and open a brand new version of every first edition module, and wouldn't that be freaking amazing, you know? And it's just that it's childhood sentimentality, because those games and those materials mean so much to me. And I don't want them adulterated either. I don't want the hobby changed. I don't want that to be changed. But that's what we have to always guard against. Say, hey, it's cool to have younger people or new players play first edition games. And even if they don't do it exactly the way we did it, that's okay. And I think that sounds kind of remedial, but it's true. And as long as everyone can be on board, or at least most people can be on board with that, hell yeah. I think, you know, to the extent that the people, OSR members, really want to be ambassadors and bring new players in, it's very possible. And there's some great people doing it. I mean, look at Matt Finch, mm-hmm. who does a great job with that, and the Frog God guys, the Castles Crusades folks are another, you know, great group where they sort of bridge that, where they bring newer players into their rule set, which really is an old school game, I think. Yeah, and even though 5th edition D&D outsells all the other editions by many, many, many times, still people are making livings writing, you know, Swords and Wizardry and other things. I mean, you can still, the sales are still decent in those products. But, you know, I think the OSR community should, if that's the goal, and maybe it's not, but if you want it to be, is to be, you know, more forward facing and welcoming to new players. Yeah. And that's, you know, that, of course,
On this show, because the way I feel is I want to be I want to be inclusive, not exclusive. So I'm always happy for more people to be around. I think new ideas can only make things fresher. Right. So I'm with you and I agree with you. So, I think we'll move into the outro. We're almost out of time. So I'm going to take a couple minutes here and talk about my patrons. Normally I have three shout outs, but I decided to go with four. I'm always happy to have new patrons, and all of these guys are new patrons actually. So Carl Bussler is a patron again, and he sounds like he's getting back into gaming. Maybe Stormlord Publishing will make a return. That would be awesome. So thank you, Carl. Welcome. Now I had another guy who put his name as Ehengaze, I think. I have no idea how to pronounce it. I even asked a couple people before the show, and I don't remember what they said. So Ehengaze, thank you for being a patron of Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. Another guy named Gilbert is a new patron. And Carl Rodriguez found Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. This is a guy I used to play hero games or champions with 10 to 12 years ago on a play-by-post board called Hero Central. So Carl, thanks for becoming a patron. And Carl's made an appearance a couple times on my live stream Kalmata live game. So thanks, man. You don't have a patron or anything you want to pimp like that, do you, Alex?
I don't. No, I don't. I would. I appreciate
so
that.
So instead,
though,
what we'll say is if people want to follow your awesome Twitter feed and hear all about you and your words as you go through your collection, what's that address?
Yeah, you could search my name, just Alex Kammer, Alexander Kammer, or my current handle is GHC and Tacos. So there you go. But what I'm doing is I'm going through the history of TSR Publishing and displaying something from my collection, one item per day. And right now we're in the middle of 1987 going through, and I post that product, give, you know, the character limit is what it is, and I try to say what I can about that product. And it's been really fun. And it's been cool. More and more people follow it and want to see the next thing each day. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I follow it, and I don't always catch it because my Twitter feed goes crazy sometimes. But when I do, I always enjoy that little bit. So if you want to find me at Twitter, I am at Hobbs Indeed, or the podcast has its own Twitter feed at OSRN Hobbs. And I pretty much just solely run both of those. So honestly, you can catch me with either one. If you want to be like the patrons I mentioned earlier, and I'm sure Alex Kammer in the future, I'm just kidding, Alex, you can go to www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. So if people wanted to talk to you about Gamehole or your collection, or you're being a lawyer, or your awesome photography, how could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, probably Twitter is the best way, or the Gamehole Con site, which is just gameholecon.com. There is a contact. All those emails come to me. If it's something specific about, you know, a games related question, you know, I send that to our director of games or whatever. But I look at them first. I just am too type A, I guess, to let someone else do that. reach out if you have any questions about the show or the publishing company or anything else, or ping me through either Facebook or Twitter.
Awesome. I guess I have a Facebook page as well for Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, and my own, and Random Screed, one of my other podcasts, also has one. Oh, I should quickly mention Hex Talk has returned. You can go out and find that. And at the G+ community, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, which is now 684 people strong. It kind of died out at like 665, which I like because that was my own paintball team name. But it's also cool to have 30 more people than I had before.
I just liked it this morning. So,
oh, well, thanks. Sure. All right. So any last words before we sign off?
No, I appreciate it. I love the show, and your nomination was well deserved. And I appreciate your taking some time to let me blather at you.
Oh, well, thanks again, Alex, for having your patience and especially for being on the show. So, everyone, thank you for being on this little journey through Mr. Hobbs's Gamerhood. We'll talk to you next time.